It's the True Faith Podcast on a Sunday. I'm here. It's me, Simon Campbell. I'm here with Ben Wade, Norman Riley on the phone. Dog is still not back from Poland. We'll not mention Poland anymore, Ben. Sorry. we're here to talk to you about the West Brom defeat yesterday. Newcastle were beaten 1-0 at home in a dull affair. Second 1-0 defeat in the space of 6 days. We'll also just talk about because there's probably about 20 minutes max of talking about that particular game. We've got some good questions in from listeners, which we'll go through from Twitter. I'd also take this opportunity to plug the new fanzine. There's a brand new episode?
Yeah, issue.
It's issue. There's a brand new issue of the True Faith fanzine out online, completely free. You can access it by going to the True Faith website, tf.co.uk. It's class, full of brilliant, brilliant articles, some by the podcast members themselves. Norman, you rate his heads in there, isn't it? And a couple more other bits.
It is, that's right, yeah. So it's worth the cover charge alone, just for that article.
Class. Definitely give that a read. There's some really class stuff in it, as always. And of course, we did a match day podcast yesterday during the game. If you wanted to relive that 1-0 1-0 for patrons, obviously you can subscribe, links in the podcast, etc, etc. Right, we'll crack on and talk about that wonderful, wonderful football match yesterday. Ben, that's the second 1-0 defeat in 6 days you've witnessed.
In a week, yeah.
So I'll come to you first. How has this week been for you as a Newcastle fan?
Down there. Absolutely rubbish. Not going to go over Monday night again, but... It was a similar, I don't think we played in the same sort of vein as Everton, but just lacking that intensity in the final third and sort of the through the build up play was apparent, and we sort of expected in the preview that would be a bit more up for this one, but it just didn't happen, and I think it's becoming apparent that the players obviously they must have been under intense pressure sort of. Back probably about 6 or 7 weeks ago now, when they dropped into the relegation zone, and obviously we played Man U after that Huddersfield result, and sort of the pressure was on, but they reacted and have been fighting ever since, and some of the results and performances have been absolutely outstanding. So we can't really fault them, but now we've sort of achieved the target of the 40 point or 41 points what Rafa wanted. It just seems to be that there's been a bit of a sort of relaxation and sort of been a sigh of relief almost from the players, and they're just not playing with the drive and sort of intensity that they did when obviously it was an idea that they needed the points.
Yeah.
I mean, yesterday just this was sort of drifted through the game, I felt like, and even in the last sort of 20, 30 minutes when we were obviously sort of pushing for the win, it wasn't sort of the normal composed performance that we used to from this team. It was very panicky. There was a lot of rushed passes. We were passing balls out of play, and it just wasn't Newcastle United we've come to know recently.
Yeah, I mean, Norman, me and you talked about this yesterday. There's a little bit of complacency there. I think it's plain to see the lads have kind of there has been a little bit of a foot off the gas. But we were talking about this, and we kind of said, even if it is just a bit of complacency, it can be absolutely forgiven, because these lads have absolutely worked their socks off, played out their skin for the last few months, and earned the right to kind of to have a few shit games. You know, the last two performances have been not what we've come to expect, but you know what? They're against teams who are still doing all right. West Brom still got something to play for. Everton at home, Allardyce is fighting to keep his job. You know what? If we have a couple of stinkers on 41 points because we've already made it, I can forgive that. And Norman, I'll come to you. I know you were as disappointed as I was after the game, because even if it is like a defeat that doesn't really mean much and we're safe, coming out of St James's Park after losing at home to West Brom doesn't feel any better, does it?
No, we said that. It's never nice to lose, obviously. So you always have that kind of, you know, that immediate post-match reaction where you just... It's interesting because it wasn't anger. It was just... you're just disappointed because your side lost, but at the same time, when we mentioned it, you do put it into context, and the kind of, you know, the further away from the game we've got and the more time you've had to think, you do start to be a lot more realistic and why it why the performance panned out how it did. I mean, you think, I suppose you can apply it to any job, and look, people can say, you know, footballers are paid thousands of pounds. It, you know, they shouldn't let complacency creep into the game. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're all human beings. And if you think any kind of pressure situation in your life, you know, if you're in a particularly busy period at work and you're tired, but you're running on adrenaline, if you're, you know, if you're setting yourself up for exams and you're running on adrenaline and the exams are finished, and you always tend to, after the kind of, after the adrenaline subsides because it's kind of no longer needed, you do kind of naturally just become a little bit more complacent, or, you know, you're all a little bit more sluggish, and that's what's happened. We had Rafa, you know, he was on TV saying the target is 40 points, the target is 40 points, and he was doing that for a considerable amount of time, and we hit that target incredibly early on, and a lot earlier than I'd imagine even Rafa anticipated. And there is no doubt there is a lack of adrenaline, and that lack of adrenaline obviously is what's contributed to the lack of intensity, which is what we saw yesterday. The chances were created. We had a good four or five chances to score. And, you know, that comes down to kind of issues of how clinical we are. And I suppose that'll be addressed pre-season once Rafa knows what kind of money he's got. But, you know, you think the Kennedy shot goes in, one's each, different game. Foster doesn't pull off that brilliant save from Gale. Again, the game changes. The Diarmia chance. So, you know, by half-time, we could have been 2-1 up, or we could have gone at least ones each. And I think by that point, West Brom were quite content to sit back. And I think if we'd gone in at half-time, ones each, we would have equalised. So it's just fine margins. And like you've both said, we can't... It's impossible to be angry about it because of what the side's achieved. You know, we're two games left of the season. We've got three games, but most teams have got two games left. And we're still in 10th place. And there's every chance, given the way the table is at the moment, that we're going to finish in the top 10, which, regardless of how the rest of the season pans out, is still, on the whole, absolutely incredible. And it's testament to what the players have given. So, it's always disappointing to lose. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not a disaster by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I completely agree. I mean, if you think back, I mean, I think we, sort of, with 10 games to go, we were sort of looking ahead to think where realistically... would we be at this stage, and I think most of us probably felt like this game, the West Brom game, would be the one where we'd probably be looking to seal our sort of safety, and actually we've done it about 4 weeks before, so you can't sort of criticise them now after sort of doing the job comfortably sort of a few weeks ago. And I think it's just, as I say, it was a frustrating game. I mean, the frustration, as you say, you've just been through the chances there. We didn't deserve to lose that game. Having said that, I mean, the way we played, it was very much West Brom came to do a job on us, and they frustrated us. They basically allowed us to dictate the game. And we know from experience that this team isn't totally comfortable when they're having to take the game to the opposition. And I think that first goal was key in it, and it went their way, and it just fell perfectly for them, that it meant they could just sit back and allow us to come on and defend, which is what they wanted to do. I mean, even then though, give credit to the lads, we've created some brilliant chances there that we've just not put away. So I'm not going to sit here and criticise them and say it wasn't good enough, because on another day we'll win that game easily 3-4-1. It was just, as I say, we didn't get the rub of the green, and that's the way it went, unfortunately.
Yeah. Actually, Alex Hurst, TF Alex, 1892,
Who's
from Twitter. Yeah, imagine that. All the way from Poland. One of his questions was, have teams worked out how to play against us, particularly when defending?
Yeah.
The pack in the penalty area and pressing our wingers and kind of pushing us back in our own half, and that it was noticeable. I think we commented yesterday during the game that Diarmi and Shelby were much deeper, and we were being pinned back a lot, but with the ball, mm-hmm. and what you've just said there, people are almost, I wouldn't say that people are working out how to play against us. I think people are now treating us like a top half team. Mm-hmm. People are setting up against us like we're they're the underdogs now, and they're kind of playing that kind of that deep, let them have the ball, we'll just hang on and try and catch them on the break. That's exactly what West Brom did yesterday, and you know what, they did it quite well.
Well, we've gone through spells of the season, haven't we? Because, I mean, if you think back, obviously we lost to Tottenham, but then at the start of the season we had that little good run where we were fourth, I think, weren't we, after five games or something. But we'd basically been winning games sort of on the back foot almost.
Yeah.
If you think of it, like
with like 30% possession.
Yeah, just sort of on back foot, boxing type. But teams, once we were in that position, teams were coming in and were saying, right, you've break with down then. Yeah. And we went on that terrible run up sort of just past up to Christmas, basically, where we didn't win for like 10 games or whatever. But that obviously in turn meant that teams were coming to have a go at us because they felt like we were there for the taking and that played into our hands. So it swings and roundabouts. I mean, I think it does what it does highlight for Rafa is it going forward, you'll know what we need in terms of the team to sort of be able to accommodate sort of the different approaches of teams. But again, I mean, as I say, you're talking about have teams worked out. Well, no, because West Brom still should have conceded three. We should have scored three goals yesterday. I'm not going to sit here and say they out sort of tactically out thought us or outplayed us or anything like that. They just got lucky.
Yeah. Nacho Dog 47 on Twitter said, it was clear that West Brom were playing us at our own game, which is kind of what we've just said. And what's the best way for us to counter that? And I think what you said is right. It's like we've played a lot of games like this season where it's been a tight, close-knit affair. We've had 3 or 4 1-0 defeats at home. We've had a couple of 1-0 wins away. We've won just as many of these games as we've lost. And that's what it's like in that kind of football match where it's tight. And, you know, after watching Match of the Day this morning, I'd forgotten how many chances we've had. And yeah, you what 1-0 wasn't fair on us. And to be honest, how to counter that? Sometimes you've just got to kind of go with it. And we didn't need the points as much as West Brom did, who technically still can stay up. It'd be sometime. And you know, the way to counter that is to go to the summer and to improve the squad. And that's what we've got to be aiming for. We know how to play in games where it's going to be tight. We know we can pick up points here and probably drop points elsewhere. The way to kind of advance on that is to improve the team. And that's kind of what we're going to start talking about a bit later is where we'll start targeting to improve the team. Have you got anything more to add to that, Norman?
I am. Just on West Brom as well. I mean, again, I don't think they deserve to win 1-0. I think on reflection, a draw would have been a fair result, I think, for both sides, because West Brom did have a couple of half opportunities with Rodriguez miss kicking a couple of times. But the other thing as well is the hunger. For the Newcastle lads, to a vast extent, the job has been done. The expectations have been met. Whereas West Brom, they've had this horrific experience under Pardew. And they've come out of it. And of course, technically they're not relegated. But even if they were, I think you've got players who have just had this kind of weight lifted from their shoulders. And they've got someone in charge who they clearly like. And they've got pride to play for. And some of them are probably playing to engender moves in pre-season or to secure the future of the club. So they had to a certain extent, had a lot more to play for than we did, and I think that was reflected in the determination levels. They were just a bit more, they were kind of a bit more committed in the tackle. They were a little bit more dynamic when they broke forward. They had a little bit more sort of pace and strength about them yesterday. And I think what I could compare it to a certain extent was, I think I mentioned this to you at the match, Simon, when Newcastle in 05-06, sorry, under Souness had been so bad for so long. Such an inept manager, such a low morale at the club. And then Rhoda took over, and Rhoda wasn't necessarily, he wasn't a particularly brilliant coach, but we went on a fantastic run. And I think a lot of it was down to the fact that the players just felt like they had this freedom that hadn't been there for months. And I think you saw that at West Brom yesterday, the body language of the players on the pitch. There was a lot of togetherness there, and we just played them at a good time for them and a bad time for us. If that had been Pardew in charge yesterday, I think we would have tanked them 3 or 4-0. I really do. A lot of little factors that kind of contributed there to the defeat yesterday. So, as I say, no reason to be disheartened. And it's a result that, you know, again, like the Everton loss of the other night, we won't even be thinking about it this time next season at all.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that, Norman. I mean, it did feel like one team was just coming to the end of a season and one team was just starting their season. It was weird, Ben.
I was just going to say, I think as well, that this West Brom side aren't that changed from the team that's been an established Premier League team for a number of years. They've just had inept managers in charge of them just doing it wrong, basically. I mean, this is still pretty much the team that Pulis had for years that came and did that to a lot of teams. They sort of nicked a goal and then sat back and defended. So they're obviously a well-drilled team. And Darren Moore's just got them sort of going back to basics. So I think, again, we've got to appreciate we're playing with, okay, they've had a bad season, but they've beaten Man U, they've beaten Arsenal, and they've beaten Newcastle United, three of the sort of form teams, as you say, that have gone to sort of take the game to them, and it's played into their hands, and they've got that type of team that are experienced in sort of seeing out those types of games and getting results out of them. So again, there's an experience factor there that I think has to come into it. That okay, we were probably favourites for the game, but it just showed us that obviously we've probably still got a long way to go in terms of the players. It's still a fairly inexperienced and young squad in terms of sort of Premier League experience. So yeah, I think it's not a result that we're going to be worrying about too much going forward. And it was what it was. We got beat. We'll move on. And but as I say, I think we can't be jumping on the team too much, because I think West Brom came with a game plan. I mean, you mentioned Rodriguez there as well. I thought he had a good game. He kept seeming to be picking up the ball in pockets, and credit to him, he sort of was a thorn on our side all afternoon while he was on. So we can't expect to sort of have everything going our own way.
Yeah, actually, they were playing a kind of solid 4-4-2, but he was basically playing as a number 10 off Rondon, wasn't he? And he did a very good job of it. If he's available in the summer, you know, Rafa, have a look.
Get him in.
And there's not much more to talk about in the match. I don't really want to criticise any individuals. I think we know who had bad games. In the first half, Richie was struggling with his passing. Dummett's had a mare for the goal, and he struggled against that Phillips, who was an absolute unit. But I don't really want to have a go at anyone. It was just an off day for everybody. Perez had an off day as well, as he can do.
I think you can't say 1-11. Nobody really
exactly
had one of the better days.
It'd be harsh to single anyone out. There's only two other incidents I do want to talk about the match yesterday. One obviously has been, I didn't even realise it had happened, but it's been picked up by Match of the Day and Shearer in particular. Slimani kicking out at, who was it?
Dawson. Kevin Dawson.
That was it. And to be fair, Dawson was being a bit of a dick, but he just kind of rise above it. It's the sort of thing that if Mitrovic did it, this podcast would be going at him. how disappointing. Ben on Twitter, BenGN87, has said, how disappointed are you lads in Slimani's actions yesterday? If you're going to completely mess up your loan spell, at least do it properly. Raji style, not with a petulant tap kick. You know, he could be banned for the last three games, as Shearer said on Match of the Day, and it's kind of... That's it. I don't think we'll see Slimani again, and it's a shame. But Norman, what are your thoughts on that incident?
Obviously, I haven't watched it back now, because like you say, we didn't. We just saw the kind of melee in the box and the few of the West Brom players complaining. And I think Agassi and Slimani were kind of obviously chatting with each other, and you didn't think anything of it. And I've looked at it, and it's exactly what it is. It's petulant. I don't think it's particularly calculated of him. You know, I don't think he's been thinking like 5 minutes before he's done it, I'm going to hoof this lad, you know. and I suppose that's possibly the slight difference with him and Mitro. Sometimes in Mitro you get the impression that he's, you know, he's already thought, I'm going to lay one on you at some point because you're annoying me already. Whereas I think with Slimani, he just got wound up and he kicked out like a petulant child, and it was a bit pathetic. You know, is it forgivable? Well, I mean, it doesn't really matter if I forgive him or not, because I think I don't think he's going to be signing for Newcastle United pre-season. You can't. There's no way you can take anything away from his contributions against Arsenal Huddersfield. He played incredibly important roles in those two fantastic victories. But and even yesterday when he came on, he improved the side initially. You know, we did look a bit more dynamic, a bit more threatening when he came on. But yeah, doing that, I mean, it's stupidity. Like people have mentioned, he's probably going to get a retrospective ban, and that's it. His Newcastle career's kind of over before it started. I think if Rafa's been given a limited amount of money in the summer, I would be surprised to see him lash out 20 million on Slimani when he hasn't really proven himself in the time that he's been. Yeah, don't get me wrong, he was very unlucky with injuries when he first got here. And as I say, his cameos have been good, but that yesterday, I suppose Rafa will probably look at that and go, is it worth me risking this 20 million?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah, I think, I mean... For me, I thought it was quite telling even before the game that he didn't start the game with Slimani. He gave him a game away at Everton. I thought if he really wanted to see what Slimani's like and with a view to keeping him, he would have been playing him in a game like this, which is a dead rubber for all intents and purposes. The fact that he wasn't in the lineup and he just went back to the 11 players that have won games, it felt like he'd already made a decision on Slimani. And I think he probably definitely has now. And you're right, it's that kind of... We will and should spend 20 to 30 million on a striker this summer, and I don't think Slimani's the right one to be putting a lot of eggs in one basket there, and he's not really that kind of moment there yesterday probably sums it up. It's just, it's not going to happen from here at Newcastle.
I don't know. I slightly disagree. I mean, I think what you said about sort of the comparison with Mitro, I don't think Mitro goes in games thinking I'm going to do you. I mean, he might do, but I think a lot of his stuff is reactionary. It is like his hot-headedness is that somebody does something and he goes and attacks him. And I think that's what that was last night. It was just a moment of madness where he's done it. But look back to the Liverpool-West Brom game last week. When they were doing all sorts of stuff, like there was a guy punched Salah, I think, or Ings or someone, and Dawson had a swipe at somebody, I think, and they were doing that yesterday. They were frustrating where they were kicking where, and there was a few tackles that I think the referee let go that I couldn't believe that he didn't book them, and I think that's again, I mean, I'm not blaming the referees, but if you're going to allow, here we go again,
get the robots in, Ben, get the robots,
here we go again, going having a go at the refs, but. I just think they a bit like we said with Bobby Madley on Monday night against Everton, he allowed situations to occur like that by not controlling the game, and that's the sole purpose really is to cut out things like that. And if you let little sort of kicks and nasty tackles go without punishment, you're gonna allow them to wind people up, and that's what you get reactions like that as a result of that, because the unjust sort of feeling of, well, he's been kicking us all game. I'm going to kick him back and you can't send me off if you've not done anything to him. So yeah. I just think the referees really need to play a bigger role in terms of cutting that stuff out if they want to do it. But if they don't, then it's their fault if anything happens. Do you know what
I mean? Yeah, I think West Brom are a big physical team and we saw that. Like, they've got a lot of massive players and you know, we're quite a lightweight team and they played to that strength in particular mm-hmm. yesterday. And you know what, it's also helped wind up a striker and make him kick out. It was all part of their plan, and they've executed it quite well. Norman?
So you mentioned Mitro there. When I said that, you know, he kind of has someone in the pit. He plays against an opposition player and he thinks, I'm going to get one on you. I don't think that he starts the match thinking, I'm going to target someone. I don't think he sat there looking at the lineups before the match. Going, oh, he's playing. I'll go and chin him. No. I suppose what I mean is that obviously... Lanzini, he lammed Alan Lanzini in the face with his elbow for no reason whatsoever. Yeah. And the other week he did it with Cahill for Fulham against Millwall, and Cahill had left something on one of Mitro's teammates, and he just went up and elbowed him.
It was ridiculous.
Seconds later, I think Mitro, a lot of the time his kind of violent lashing out that's happened, there's been a more calculated element to it. Whereas I think like Slimani yesterday was just pure of the moment. He just got annoyed with Dawson and just lashed out at him. Yeah. It was a bit of a pathetic kick, really. But I'm definitely not saying that Mitro, like, you know, looks through the stats on BBC and sees, oh, there's a player we're coming up against. I'll go and chin him because I fancy it. Definitely not saying that at all.
Welcome to the True Faith podcast, talking about Mitro again when he's not even here.
How have we got onto Mitro?
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on from that. The only other thing that I think needs addressing from yesterday's match was what happened at the full-time whistle when, and I'll say a minority, but it was audible. There was quite a noticeable boo from a small section of the crowd, and it's a fucking disgrace. Like, that anyone, this is a Newcastle United team that hasn't lost at home in 2018 since 2017. What was all that about? I mean, I couldn't get my head around it. These people are absolute arseholes. Complete arseholes. It was a shite game. We know it was a shite game. It was dull. There wasn't many chances. But actually, even watching back match of the day, as I said before, we did all right in the end. Even in a shite game, we're the better team and probably deserve something. But what a bunch of useless, entitled fucking arseholes booing that team. These lads who've yanked up from relegation zone in February to where we are now, 10th in the league, 3 points clear of 11th, with a game in hand, with a better goal difference, and they're booing because they're not entertained enough. Fuck off, man! Like, I was furious. I felt really, really upset that happened. I don't know if you lads feel as strongly about it, but I came away raging.
Yeah, I do. I think it's absolutely moronic behaviour. And one of the things about it is, you know, you've got it is a very, very small amount of fans in the stadium, but the problem is that obviously yesterday's game. And this is another thing that kind of I've got a bit of a gripe with, is that we're 1-0 down and there's like sort of, you know, you've got maybe in the 85th, 86th minute, you're going to have like 3 or 4 minutes of injury time. So you're looking at probably 7-8 minutes to go. And because we're 1-0 down and because we're not quite getting the rub of the green, it's not quite happening. the stadium's emptying very quickly, and that's what happened yesterday. I thought from 85 minutes onwards, it did start emptying very quickly. We both kind of pointed it out, Simon, you and I. And what happens then is that obviously by the time the full-time whistle goes, people get up and leave straight away as well. So you're left with, you know, not many fans in the stadium. So those who do boo, even though they're a tiny minority, it kind of reverberates more. So then what happens is you've got the players obviously being able to hear that. You've got Rafa being able to hear that. And it's so utterly unhelpful. And you think, well, if everyone had stayed in until the end and kind of clapped the players off the pitch, because regardless of yesterday's performance, those players still deserve to be clapped off the pitch after the season that they've had.
Yeah.
And if that had happened, the boom wouldn't even have registered. But the situation we've got is because loads of people left, because this booing echoed around the stadium, all of a sudden you've got, like, you know, Newcastle fans booing their players off the pitch. And it's so utterly negative to do that. Klopp had a brilliant, he put out something brilliant this season about kind of negativity of booing in the stadium not helping at all. And he's absolutely right. And anybody who booed yesterday needs to have a look at themselves and actually ask themselves whether or not they're a Newcastle fan, because that's truly pathetic.
I can only assume it's people who haven't been there for the last few months. They've picked up a ticket for the West Brom game from a mate who couldn't go or something, and they've showed up expecting Newcastle, who've won the last well, barring Everton, the last four or five games. I totally agree, Norman, and yeah, I'd like to believe that your explanation there makes a bit of sense, that the stadium had emptied out a bit. It was a cold evening and people were going home early, and I don't agree with it, but maybe that's why the 100 or 200 people that do end up booing could be heard so well. But it's really, really frustrating. I really hope that Rafa doesn't think too much of it. I really hope the players don't think too much of it. It is a minority of people. Every football club has them, we're sure. Sunderland has loads more of them.
And Everton,
yeah.
I think just it's just bizarre. I'd love to be able to ask the people, what are you booing? Because there wasn't I've seen a couple of things on social media. There wasn't a lack of application or a lack of
effort
there from that team. We didn't play badly. Okay, we've lost it. I get we've lost the game, so I'm assuming that's what they're booing. But you, in terms of the players, like what why are you booing? They've put everything into that game. We've created chances. We've just been a bit unlucky. There's not really anything there, as we said, to sort of particularly criticise any. You can't criticise them for that performance, really, in terms of given such a harsh. I mean, booing somebody is pretty harsh. It didn't warrant that. Yeah. It was okay, you're not happy, but booing that performance just doesn't make any sense. I don't get what you get out of it.
It's a ridiculous behaviour for an adult human to be making that noise. Boo, it's strange. We've talked about it before. It's such an odd thing for anyone, a grown-up who's paid money to go and watch a football match to do. Nacho Dog again came on Twitter and said, "Shall we identify the people who boo and arrange for the captain to go around and give them a clip? Because it worked for Mo Diarmi." it seems to turn his life around. Not a bad idea. I really hope that some of those people got injured on the way home, got maimed by a pigeon or something. You know, just something not too terrible, but something bad happened to them to ruin their day a bit more. Because
basically chatting to each other and they criticised the performance, and then a pigeon took a shit and it, like, the shit landed on one of their mouths or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Ashley Young.
Or the shit landed just in front of them and they slipped on it or something, you know, something stupid and terrible should happen to these people.
That must have been a big pigeon shit.
Right, so we've had to say on that, it's a disgrace, but it's been, you know, we haven't seen it for a long time because Rafa Smag's been playing so well, and I'm sure Rafa We'll not think too much.
Can I add something that that kind of extends on that point of booing?
Go on.
So Hosselu, this is a tiny, tiny, tiny. It's so tiny it's not even a minority of fans, because it's like not even like, you know, there's not even enough fans you can count on one hand. But Hosselu put a photo out on Twitter this morning of him and his kid, and they're saying something about how much he loves his kid, and then a couple of fans like basically slating him for his performance yesterday, saying, you know, you've got this wonderful opportunity to be a professional footballer. It's a gift. You should take it with both hands. And you're thinking, I mean, how utterly unnecessary is that? Hosselu had a great chance at the end. He missed it. We all know that he's, you know, he's a championship striker at best. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't choose to miss those chances. You know what I mean? He still puts the effort, and he's just not quite good enough. And to reply to a tweet that a footballer's put up with his kid and criticise him for a performance is, I mean, it's spectacularly pathetic, it truly is.
If he has chosen Norman, he wants all the abuse in the world.
Yeah, exactly, if he's elected to miss those chances, yeah. I mean, it wasn't The ball's coming to him. It looks like, I don't know who's there first. I think it's Diarmi. Lejeune. It looks like Lejeune's going to head it. Lejeune doesn't quite connect with it. So he's got a very short amount of time to react to it. And it makes the miss look worse than it probably was. But this is a lad who hasn't really been in the team for the last like 2 months. He's hardly played much. And he's come in. He's done a job up front with another striker that he's never played with in Slimani. And, you know, like, how can we be that critical of him? It's just... I don't know what the small number of fans want. I don't know what they want.
Yeah, that's the thing. What do you gain from doing that? It's just pathetic. But alas, never mind.
It'll lead into the debate about what we kind of need to bring in this summer. But Ben GN87 also asked, can you recall NUFC ever missing so many sitters in one season? It does feel like a whole season where we've missed chance after chance after chance. And is that just, have we been really, really unlucky this season? Or is that indicative of the fact that we do need to invest in some better strikers?
That's it, isn't it? It's the striking department. I think when you look, okay, the lads were good enough last season in the championship, but you do look at the front line of Perez, Gale and Hosslu. Obviously, Slimani's come in towards the end, who I think has added something and looked good. He's not really had the opportunities to sort of show that. I mean, he should have been gifted a goal from Perez in the Everton game that he didn't get. And he's not really had any other opportunities where he's... I don't remember him really having a goal-scoring chance, to be honest, in most games. So I think... But the other lads, obviously Perez, Gale and Hosslu, they do just lack that bit of quality at the top end, and that's what it is. And it's no secret, everybody knows it, that... And Rafa, obviously that's why we've ended up with Slimani in January. Rafa understood that's where we needed a bit of quality up at the top end of the pitch. And I think... If you think of just putting a decent striker on the end of a lot of those chances, we wouldn't have been in the position we're in. Having said that, at the same time, I don't want to be too critical of the players, because the likes of Gale and Perez have put in massive shifts this season, and they've done a lot of good for the team, more so off the ball really as well. So that shouldn't go unnoticed. But I think it's a department where we do need to improve, and we'll probably just lack that bit of composure in the sort of what in the final moments of sort of the play, where we just need that bit of quality, and that'll have a massive difference on the team.
Yeah, Norman, I'll ask you this question. It's from Adam Widrington, regular podcast contributor. How many strikers does Rafa need to buy this summer?
Oh, it's a tough one. I mean, every point Ben made there is bang on. You know, Gale and Perez put in so much work, and they're intelligent players. You know, they create space, they make the right runs, they get into positions to score goals, especially Gale. But unfortunately, they aren't clinical enough. That's the issue. They're just not clinical enough. And as a forward, no matter how much work you're putting in, like they are, you do have to score goals. And obviously, Gale's got 5 or 6 this season, and we all know that that's not enough. And Gale himself will know that that's not enough. I mean, he's a straight guy. He knows that he trades goals. So how many do you have to buy? I mean, look, would I be happy to see Dwight Gale there next season? Would I be happy to see Dwight Gale there next season? 100%. Would I like to see somebody up front who's going to get 15 to 20 goals? Absolutely. Would I like to see Perez there next season? Yes, I would. But would I like to see a number 10 who perhaps weighs in with more goals and is maybe a little quicker? Yes, I absolutely would. But that's it for me. Get one high-quality number 10 in. Get one high quality centre forward in, then there's no reason why Gil and Perez can't still be important contributors to the squad, but obviously not as, you know, regular starters, or not starting every single game and being pretty much the only options we have. We do need a couple of players to make us that bit more clinical. But why not? I mean, one forward, probably two forwards, because Hosslu, I think, will be on his way, and Slimani's on loan. So let's say we need to go out and sign two centre forwards, but I think we just need the one who's exceptionally clinical, and then Gale and someone at his level, perhaps, or just a bit above, to be challenging for that position.
You bring Perez and the number 10 position in as well. Anthony Edmens Fahi, if I'm saying that right, apologies, Anthony, if I'm not. He's saying that Perez has shown not to be a number 10 again in the last few games. A bit harsh on him considering the three previous games he scored in and played excellent, but it's been a funny season for Perez, where we just haven't quite got enough out of him in terms of goals. He's been involved, and he's worked his arse, as I've said, Norman, and his defensive contribution, his overall contribution to the team has been fantastic. But if we want to improve on a presumed top 10, top 11 finish, then yes, I totally agree with you. I think what I'd like to see as well is we'll get a striker, a much better striker than what we have now, whether that's that's got to be a minimum of £30 million spend these days. And if we've got a mint striker, then you can still have a Gale or even a Mitrovic as other options. I mean, I don't know if either of those will still be here, because to make funds up, we might sell Gale, we might sell Mitrovic to bring some cash back in. But what we need is a centre forward that we can build around and then have those players contributing as well. Same with Perez. I think we need to improve on him, buy a better player, and then he can still be in and around the team, chipping in, making an appearance off the bench. And that's kind of the first two places Rafa's probably going to be looking, because the defence has been really good and looking really, really settled at the minute. Ben?
I think it depends on what investment we get in the squad, because you would say if we're going to have another season next year like this where at the end of the day, if we haven't got enough to improve other areas of the squad as well, then I don't think we need a huge amount, because, as I say, that they've played a massive part in the way this team has fought in terms of off the ball and the way we play. They are dogged players. They don't necessarily get you the quality in the final third attacking wise, but the work they do defensively shouldn't go unnoticed and is massive for the way this team works. And I mean, you look at the difference with when Gale's in the team with Shelvey. He makes Gale make Shelvey look better because he gets on the end of all these balls, and Perez, again, the hounding he does off the ball is sort of, again, is really quality work and something that I'm sure Rafa really appreciates. If you go out and buy two quality, maybe a quality striker and a quality attacking midfielder, normally that you don't get those traits out of them. They're selfish. Then they're players that just look to sort of get involved in the game in when the team's on top and they're attacking. I mean, you look at some of the best strikers in the world, they don't do any running, they're just waiting for chances. I mean, look at completely related to best strikers in the world, look at Jermaine Defoe at Bournemouth. He doesn't get involved in any of the play, and obviously back when he was at Sunderland as well, he was literally just using all his energy for that one opportunity where he got. And obviously if you start playing with a striker like that, where we're having to carry an extra man in that team, or potentially two if we get a number 10 that's just interested in getting on the ball and attacking, then we're going to look a very, very different team, and you could actually see the team suffer because of that. I mean, look at Arsenal, the types of players they've had over the years, some absolute fantastic quality, but the criticism they've always had is that they've got no fight in them, and they're just, the players are so attack orientated that they don't get involved in any of the nitty gritty stuff, and that leaves teams that sort of can cope with their attack when they counter attack. They're outnumber them, and that's why Arsenal have struggled for so long. So you have to be careful with the blend of the team that you bring in, that you're not going to lose the qualities that have made this team so good to potentially just get a few more goals. Because okay, if we get another striker that maybe scores 5-6 more goals next season, however, you might have the adverse impact that we probably ship 20 more goals that year. So in terms of the net impact it has, I think we need to be very careful. Going back to the original point, I mean, it's undoubted we need additional players in those positions in 10 and 9, just because we don't have a lot of options. I mean, Perez is literally the only number 10 in the team at the minute, so we have to get other players in. But I think Rafa will need to be careful, sort of the type that he brings in, that they fit in with this team and the sort of the character of the team.
Yeah,
totally. I agree, sir. I'll put in the assignment. I think you were going to make a point. I've just put it straight, and I apologise profusely.
No, go on.
Good points, Ben. I mean, you know, obviously Gale and Perez do give away that extra buy. It's almost kind of the defending from the front to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But I don't think what Rafa's going to do in pre-season, obviously, you know, bearing in mind, you know, how much it's all hinges on how much money he gets. But I can't imagine he's going to go out for one second and buy you a centre forward who is nothing other than just a goal scorer, because like you see, it doesn't fit in with the style of how he sets his teams up. I mean,
yeah,
even looking like when he had Torres at Liverpool, Torres grafts. He's always been a grafter as a striker as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we want is, we obviously want, you know, somebody with kind of Gale's work ethic and ability to harass and harry the opposition, but also who's a bit more clinical. And I mean, I think you know, we're not going to be, there's not going to be any kind of unrealistic targets. I mean, you know, you look at the sides in the bottom three, and if you look at someone like Southampton or West Brom, even players like Charlie Austin and Gio Rodriguez, you know, they're no world beaters by any stretch of imagination, but they're not just lazy centre forwards, and they're a little bit more clinical, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's going to be, I don't think it's going to be a case of, you know, this like whole revolutionary change. We're going to get in like a kind of Ben Arfa-esque number 10 and, you know, like a Lacazette or Aubameyang style centre forward who, like you say, because they neglect the kind of defensive aspects of the game, it means that we're more liable to concede. And I just think it's going to be an incredibly, as it will always be with Rafa, an incredibly well thought out process in the window. And we all know that if he can't upgrade on, say, Perez and Gale, then he won't buy players for the sake of it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there's one man you trust to make those kind of decisions and to pick the right players, it's Rafa Benitez, isn't it? He's done it almost perfectly so far. Yes, he's had a couple that haven't come good. Lazars and a few people like that. But you know what? He's picked some fantastic players so far. And even Kennedy, if he can get him on permanent, I'm not saying he can for 1 minute, because he's probably going to be in high demand this summer. If Chelsea don't want to keep him, whoever takes over at Chelsea, he'll be in big demand for big money. So it'll be a shame, but we're probably not that likely to keep him because he's so good, unless he really has been bitten by the Newcastle bug, the Rafa bug, and fancies it, which could happen, and I hope
stop
it does.
Booing him.
Yeah, there's 200 booers could be the difference, you never know. Mark Wallace, Waller81, on Twitter, says, we lack a proper creative midfielder, someone to pick a clever pass and finding a forward. I mean, we've got Jonjo Shelvey, and he's pretty good at that, but yesterday, albeit he had a poor game. He goes on to say, also someone willing to take a man on. Everything's a bit slow yesterday. Final ball, terrible. Bit of fatigue creeping in. But yeah, his point is that creative midfield is the other thing we're kind of lagging. Yeah, we talk about Perez. He does run at plays. He tries to take them on. Doesn't come off that often. But when it does, things happen. Yeah, just an improvement on that, as he said, Ben. We've only got one number 10. Attacking midfielders, I mean, we've been so reliant on Shelvey and Diame over the last few months. If one of them had been injured, I don't know where I would have gone, because Marino, since his injury, just I'm really worried. I don't know if he's got a future at Newcastle. So a centre midfielder is another area where we're really short. If there's an injury there, we'll fall off a cliff.
It would have been interesting, actually, if Marino was able to come into that 10 role, because I get what he's saying. I mean, I think it's not ignoring what Shelvey does, but Shelvey, I mean, we saw it yesterday, dropped so deep. You need someone to link. We had a complete sort of disconnect between the midfield and the attack yesterday, yeah. And that's what the issue was that we didn't have anybody able to bring the ball down from Shelvey's sort of ball, because he sits so deep. He's playing long balls, and you need someone that's able to bring that down and then sort of allow them to get up the pitch and contribute higher up. So I get what he's getting at, and unfortunately Perez, I don't think gives you that. He's a bit too lightweight to be able to hold the ball up. There was a couple of times where he sort of got away from players. There was one where McLean just went and shoulder barged him and he just fell over and the ref didn't give anything in it. Played on. You just think that's where we're sort of lacking. And again, so the Marino one, it would have been interesting to see sort of him maybe in the 10 role, just sort of seeing what he could do, because he's got the technical ability to hold up the ball. He's a big lad as well. It's good in the air, obviously. He scored a couple of scored against Palace, and he won a lot of headers and things like that. So he would have been an interesting player to sort of see what he might have done in that 10 role ahead of Diarmi and Shelvey. But obviously he was viewed very much as the alternative to Shelvey. It would have been nice to see what those three could have done together. But if that's not going to sort of happen, then definitely we probably do need a player that is going to be able to come in and contribute. I mean, we mentioned it already about Rodriguez, and you've just said it there. He looked a really good player and sort of really did well in that limited West Brom sort of attack, because I mean they weren't doing much of it, but when they were, he was causing issues for us, and he's got a bit of pace about him. He is a finisher. I mean, he's a player that has scored bags of goals for Burnley in the past, and has got a good reputation in the Premier League. I mean, it wasn't long ago he's been linked with Spurs, I think. And so if he was available, that'd be a great signing, I think. But I think that's probably one of the most important positions that we look at, is just how we can impact the game more in the final third and just bring something different that we don't have at the minute.
Yeah, and what you've said before is it's so important to find the right player who can still keep up that work rate, because that work rate is what's... It saved our season. That Shelvey, Perez, Diarmi, for all they lack, not so much Shelvey, who is a quality player, but for all they lack in ability, and Diarmi, I don't know what the hell's happened to him. Because I can't even describe how he lacks ability, because he's got so much more ability than anyone else on the pitch at the minute. But generally speaking, those three, you'd have said at the beginning of the season, are quite limited in what they have talent-wise. Compared, you know, they're not, they're Premier League footballers, but probably not much more than that. and yet what we're getting out of them is has been phenomenal this season. And yeah, so while we could look to improve those players, we can't sacrifice the work rate we've been getting out of them. I'll move on to defenders. I mean, defensively, we've been so good since Christmas, basically. It's hard to find fault with players. I mean, even Yedlin has really improved recently, and his pace is something that is really important to us at times. But Burnsy NUFC, whose Twitter handle is Ben Arthur Chance, has said, "Can the ineptitude of our fullbacks be discussed? Yedlin and Dummett with more negative influence than positive," he's saying. Harsh again, because they've both played really well recently. Dummett, from the player that we used to criticise regularly on this podcast as not good enough to play football for Newcastle in the Premier League, as not a fullback. He has proven that he is a fullback. He can play left fullback, and he can play left fullback in the Premier League. If your point is that we're in a difficult position now, and me and Norman keep talking about this, where we love this set of players, the graft they've put in, it's hard to be critical of them. When you talk about who do you want to come in to replace them, you don't want to replace any of these players, because I've got nothing against any of them at the minute. Mm-hmm. Dummett included, Yedlin included, the work rate and what they've done for the season since Rafa's taken over. But if this club wants to then take the next step, and we're in that kind of weird loop where to go forward, we need Rafa Benitez, but to have Rafa Benitez, we need to be aiming to go forward. So we can't go into the top eight without Rafa Benitez, and unless we're aiming to go in the top eight, Rafa Benitez won't stick around. So maybe that's why you do have to start making some difficult decisions. Do you sort of say, right, Paul, you're a squad player, but we need a better left fullback who can get forward, who can contribute a bit more. Yedlin, defensively, a little bit frail, albeit his pace often helps him recover if there's a mistake. The centre-halves, I really don't think we could do better at the minute than Lejeune, Lascelles, and maybe having a backup in there, because I don't think Mbembe's probably away. Kieran Clark was probably shown not to be good enough. So again, injuries in there, and we're suddenly in real trouble. So we do need some defensive reinforcements. Norman, do you agree? Do you think the fullbacks are kind of our weak link at the moment, or do you think that's harsh?
I think it's harsh because they've had one bad game since what, Christmas maybe. Dummett's been absolutely fantastic since he's come back from injury, and Yedlin's been really good as well. He had a really poor run of form and during the bad run. Obviously Watford was his kind of in the game, but he's come back a lot stronger for it, and they both just had off days yesterday. Of course, going on the next level, are they good enough? I mean, none of us know, but what they do need is, they need competition. That's what's important. What you want is ideally in pre-season, we'll have Rafa go out and he'll sign a right and left back who are either better than the current two, or they can at least challenge them to push them onto the next level. But I'm definitely not in the kind of writing them off camp. I think these two fullbacks have got us into the top 10, and therefore, it is a bare minimum that they're excellent squad players to have. If Rafa went out this summer and picked up Bertrand from a relegated Southampton, would Bertrand be in the side ahead of Dummett? Probably. But I don't think that's any reason to kind of write Dummett off and to maybe get rid of him. I think both have got a part to play next season, and I think they'll both still be here, regardless of whether or not we sign other players in those positions.
Yeah, I mean, I think my point on that is that if we buy players who are better than any of the team we have, great, but it doesn't mean that that's the end of their Newcastle careers. If we buy a striker, it doesn't mean we'll have to sell Gale or that Gale's done. It means that we've got an improved player, and then Gale has to work hard to get chances to stick around. Same with Dummett, same with Yedlin. If we can bring in a much better right back, doesn't mean that we're done with Yedlin. He would be a good squad player to have, and I'm sure he'd appreciate the chance to try and prove himself and stick around to fight for his place. Dummett would be the same. He would fight for his place and given opportunities. He's done it before where players have been injured and he's come in. So, yeah, I think it is harsh to be critical of those two players in particular based on our defensive record since the start of this year. Paul Dummett has been absolutely excellent, really proven that he could be a solid Premier League player for years to come. Yeah, Lynn's probably got a bit more to do. He's had a good couple of weeks apart from yesterday, but yeah, I don't think any of the signings we make will be about replacing players. It'll be about adding depth, adding a quality player in a position, which means that we've got depth and strength in the squad.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of the competition. That obviously when we've had our best side sort of recently in the recent history, it's been when we've had lots of options and we've had real quality and sort of players pushing each other on. Going back to the original question though, I do agree with him a little bit. I mean, I've been quite critical of Yedlin at times, and I completely understand what you're saying, and he does a job, but I just think he's lacking the fundamentals of what we require at a full back. And I'll probably give Dummett the nod over Yedlin, because at least Dummett is really sound defensively and rarely ever gets dominated. I mean, he made a mistake yesterday, but that one mistake cost it. He didn't really have much trouble at any other time. There was a couple of times where they were getting down the right flank, and he seemed to sort of deal with the issues. So I think Dummett's got a role to play in terms of when we've got to go and set a team up to be defensive and be defensively sound. And maybe if there's sort of a winger there that's got a bit of height about him, Dummett would be the man that you would choose, because he is almost like an extended sort of left centre back playing at left back. But we can't deny and we can't ignore what the criticisms we had in the past were, that he doesn't offer enough going forward in the attack. And in terms of Yedlin, I think his one sort of saving grace is that he is really fast, he can recover, but he does make a lot of mistakes, and I feel like we can upgrade that position if we just had someone a bit more tactically aware and a bit more sort of idea in terms of what they need to do in defensive situations. I mean, there was a couple of times there was a long ball up to Yedlin yesterday where he didn't really know what to do, and he's just sort of jumped with a header and given the ball away. And it's just things like that. It's fundamentals. You should know at this level what to do and sort of not take any risks. And I feel like he does take a lot of risks, and I don't know. I think Yedlin's probably the weakest link in this team in terms of, I think he's the player that can be got at the most and isn't as defensively sound as the other three positions. So I think if there was one priority for my team, and I said it on the podcast I did with Dodgy last week, I think that would be my sort of number one choice, would be for a right back that is defensively sound and sort of can contribute in the attack. I mean, interestingly, we saw Dummett came off yesterday for Murphy, and Kennedy went into left back. And I was really excited to see that. Sort of Richie went over to the left wing, and we had Kennedy at left back, and he didn't do too badly. Kennedy, he had a few opportunities towards the end of the game, and obviously was basically playing as a left winger. We had sort of two left wingers. He was playing that high up the pitch. But at the same time, I felt like, again, I don't know whether it was the game plan or what, but he sort of lacked intensity in terms of he wasn't really making overlapping runs. He wasn't really getting involved. And I don't know if that's just the way Rafa had told him to play the left-back role in terms of think defensively first and don't overcommit. But it just I felt like we could have got a lot more out of Kennedy from what we see and what we know about him as an attacking winger. I was expecting a bit more from him from a left-back position. But yeah, I mean, I don't know why that didn't work. But there's definitely, if depending on how this team sort of materialises next year, and depending on how Rafa, if fingers crossed he's still here, and with the investment, how he, depending on what sort of the game plan is going to be for this team, if we're going to go out and dominate teams, then we need two full-backs that can contribute at both ends of the pitch. Whereas at the minute, I think we've got Yedlin, who's that fast that he can get forward, and I think he's probably a better as an attacking threat than he is defensively. And then on the other side, we've got Dummett, who doesn't really get involved in the attack at all, and is very much a sort of sound defensive player. So I think there's the two positions that we can upgrade. I mean, in terms of the individuals, I think they've still got roles to play in the team, but I think they are two important positions where we can improve. I mean, just on Yedlin, though, even yesterday, it was frustrating that he was the player that was getting a lot of the ball, and we were really wasteful sort of with that. And we all said yesterday there were a lot of players were off. I mean, him and Richie yesterday, I don't think clicked too well, but it was just a one-off game in terms of things that they were trying didn't quite come off. I think they do generally as a partnership though work quite well. I mean, the Yedlin's overlapping runs do get us in good positions, so it's not something that we should just take for granted that we can do much better. But I think it's something that we probably do need to strengthen if we want to make that jump forward.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly on Paul Dummett before we move on, if you think about how much he's improved over the last 18 months under Rafa, why can't he continue to improve? And you can say that for any Newcastle player. If whatever team we start the season with, you know that it will be better after 12 months under Rafa. So if he stays and is given some money to spend, and we've still got some young players in there to work on, we'll be far better for it as time goes on. Norman, have you got anything more to add to that?
No, I'm at pretty comprehensive explanations, I suppose. Of course, you know, what I would say is obviously, you know, we would take an improvement in every position if it was realistic. But looking at, you know, thinking kind of ahead of the summer and how much Rafa might have to spend, I just don't right now think that Yedlin and Dummett's positions are the ones that we desperately need the, or more desperately need the changes in. So, yes, we'd love to get players who are, you know, for want of a better word, better than them. But at the same time, I think the most important thing is getting good competition in for them, and then looking to spend what money Rafa does have in the areas that are going to make a bigger impact on taking us forward, i.e. The forward positions.
Yeah, spot on. Right, we'll probably wrap it up there then. Just a quick word on our neighbours, and probably listen to the podcast, Hello Sunderland Football Club. They've got rid of Chris Coleman today, and there's also talk that the Ellis Short's finally about to part ways. I'd just like to say to both of them, thanks very much. Thanks for the memories, because it's been absolutely class having you both involved for as long as you have been on both counts. So that's great. Cheers, lads. Anyone else want to have a quick dig before we wrap up?
I won't have a dig. I would just like to say all the best to the incoming chairman from Eastleigh Football Club.
Nice one. Yeah, okay, cheers. Thanks for joining us, lads. Thanks, Norman. Thanks, Ben. We'll be back. Is it Exiles or Originals this week on Patreon? Exiles, Norman?
Exiles, that's correct. We'll be recording that on Thursday night.
Originals might be getting pied.
The Originals hasn't gone well so far. Norman, myself, and Mark Cowley also got the chance to meet Ryan Taylor on Friday. We've had a 30-minute interview with him, which we'll be putting out in the very near future. To patrons, so please sign up. You can also, as mentioned at the start of the show, there's a brand new episode of True Faith Fanzine. That's a book, so it's a brand new issue. 138 just gone live on the website. Loads of brilliant articles in there. Please click and have a look.
Are we gonna have to like take acting classes and start like putting out like a show called the True Faith Fanzine, just acting out like, I don't know, it'd just turn it like Biker Grove or something, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah. Episode 1 coming soon.